We sing sweet hour of prayer, but we're content with 5 or 10 minutes. We sing onward Christian soldiers, but we wait until we're drafted, or worse yet, we go AWOL. We sing, oh, for 1,000 tongues to sing, but we won't even sing with the one we have. We sing, there shall be showers of blessings, but then we won't come when it rains. We sing, blessed be the tie that binds, and yet we let the least little offense sever it. We sing, serve the Lord with gladness, and then gripe about every Christian activity that we're involved in. We sing, I love to tell the story, and yet never mention it at all. We sing, we're marching to Zion, but we won't even march to worship or Bible school. We sing, cast your burden on the Lord, and yet we worry ourselves into a nervous breakdown. We sing, the whole wide world for Jesus, and we never even invite our neighbor. We sing, O day of rest and gladness, and then wear ourselves out traveling, cutting grass, or playing golf on Sunday instead of being here to rest our souls. We sing, throw out the lifeline, but content ourselves with throwing out a fishing line. Sometimes we're guilty of these kinds of offenses. We want to look tonight at hypocrisy. Jesus, as well as other Bible writers, try to point out to us that sincerity is of great importance. And we're told that, in essence, it's not hip to be a hypocrite. And yet, sometimes that seems to be our goal in life. What is a hypocrite? We throw that term around, oh, so-and-so's just a big hypocrite. Or, oh, I don't want to go to that church because it's full of hypocrites. You hear that a lot. But what is a hypocrite? Sometimes that term is used when it shouldn't be. And sometimes it's not used when it should be. The word hypocrite in the Greek language, hypocrite is actually just a transliteration of the Greek word hypokrite. And that word for hypocrite, as we call it, simply means one who is play-acting, one who is playing a role on the stage, an actor, in other words. When an actor or actress gets on a movie or a television show or a Broadway stage and they pretend to be a character, if we're smart, we recognize that that's just what they're doing. They're pretending. Of course, sometimes young children and sometimes even as adults, we seem to get sucked into that. We really believe that that person is like that. And we forget that that's just a role they're playing. That's just them acting. Well, the same thing can happen with us in our lives. Sometimes we are just playing a role. We're reading a script. We're acting out a certain character. But when the stage lights go off and we change back into our regular clothes and we go home, we're somebody else entirely, as most of those actors are. Most of those actors are very different people in real life than the characters that they portray when they're on screen. Some of them are nice and friendly, and others can be very mean and rude. And yet they may, some of the nicest ones may play serial killers on a movie. And some of the meanest ones may play a role in the movie where they're just the most wonderful person in the whole show. But that's just acting. Who are we really? when nobody else is looking, or when we think no one else is looking, who are we? What do we believe? And being a hypocrite has a lot more to do with why we do the things we do than it does sometimes with what we do. Two individuals may do the exact same thing, and one of them may be a hypocrite, and the other one may be very sincere. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference for us human beings looking on from the outside. That's one of the things that the Bible warns us about hypocrisy, is that the very purpose of hypocrisy is to fool the people living around us into believing that that's who we really are, when that's not the truth. That's what the Pharisees did. They put on the show. They did all of the righteous things, but they weren't doing it sincerely. They were doing just that, putting on a show. They were acting. We need to understand that when someone claims to be a Christian and sins, that in and of itself does not make that person a hypocrite. Sometimes people are falsely accused of being hypocrites because they're Christians and they claim to be Christians, and yet they do something sinful. Somebody says, see, you're just a hypocrite. But what we have to understand is hypocrisy is in the doing of that wrong thing and yet refusing to admit that we've done the wrong thing. If you look in Luke chapter 18, you see the parable that Jesus tells there of the Pharisee and the tax collector, who both went up to the temple to pray. And these two individuals, beginning in verse 9, it talks about this. Jesus spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous. You see the problem already, don't you? It wasn't that they were more sinful than anyone else, or even that they didn't live up to a certain standard, but they trusted in themselves that they were righteous. And we notice that as the Pharisee comes into the temple to pray, in verse 11 it says, he prayed with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican or tax collector. His first response is, Lord, I'm glad I'm not a sinner. I'm glad I don't do bad things. But if you notice there in verse 11, it said that he prayed with himself. God wasn't listening. He was talking to nobody but himself. He was arrogant. His fault, and the fault that threatens us and can cause us to be hypocrites like this man was, is that he was a sinner. Oh, maybe he hadn't done as many things as all of these others. Maybe he'd never committed adultery. Maybe he'd never extorted anyone. Maybe he hadn't done the things that this tax collector that was also praying had done. But he was still a sinner. The Bible tells us all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. His problem was he wouldn't admit it. He wanted to keep pretending that he was right and that he was perfect and just and that he could stand in front of God without being concerned about any wrongdoing. And that was his biggest mistake. On the other hand, the tax collector wouldn't even raise his eyes up to heaven, but he hit himself on the breast and he said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Jesus says, that's the man that went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalts himself shall be abased, and he that humbles himself shall be exalted. So Jesus tells us that the first step in fighting off hypocrisy is to admit we are sinners. To admit we need God. To get rid of the idea that I'm holier than you are. That I'm more righteous, that I'm better. We have to remember, as the Jews learned in the first century, that regardless of your background, all of us are saved by grace through faith in Jesus Christ. None of us are saved because we worked so good and got rid of all our sins and got our sins forgiven by ourselves. It didn't work that way. We must realize that even if we ever committed one single sin, whatever you might consider the smallest of sins, just one is all it would take for us to need a Savior. For us to be unable to stand before God. Just one. And yet all of us, if we're honest, must admit, yes, I sin. Yes, I have sin in my life. John says, if we say we have no sin, we make him a liar, and the truth is not in us. We can't say we don't have sin. And yet, how many times do we try to cover up our sin? We try to pretend that we didn't do it. And many times we'll even go so far as to lie about it, adding another sin on top of it in order to pretend that we didn't have the first sin that we're lying about. When we build sin upon top of sin and yet continue to deny it, then we truly are the hypocrite. That's when we're putting on the show for man. But God sees right through that, doesn't He? Because God knew already what was in your heart. He knew even as you committed that sin, why you were committing it, and what had brought you to that point. We can't deny it to Him, even if we try to deny it to others. Our scripture for tonight comes from Job chapter 13 and verse 16. There were many scriptures along these lines, and I wasn't sure which one to pick, but I chose this one. Job says, "He also shall be my salvation, for an hypocrite shall not come before Him." God will not allow hypocrisy to stand before Him in the day of judgment. It will be a sad state for many when they see on the day of judgment people that they had looked down their noses at all their lives as being people who were less righteous than they were, and see the Father welcome them in only to turn to that self-righteous individual and say, "Depart from me. I never knew you." We've got to realize just how important it is for us to worship God and to love God and to serve God from the heart. And how important honesty and sincerity are. We all have sinned. We might as well admit it. It doesn't do us any good to deny it. In fact, it does us harm. Job 15 and verse 34 says, "The congregation of hypocrites shall be desolate." Can you imagine an entire congregation of hypocrites? How desolate they would be. Stories told of a man who, upon dying, was went up to heaven, and one of the angels there met him, and he began to talk about the church that he had been a part of and how wonderful that church had been. And the angel said to him, "Would you like to see that church the way that God sees that church?" And he said, "Oh, yes, that would be wonderful to get to see that. You know, those people, they're so wonderful." And so the angel takes him and shows him, and they come to the service of the church. And they're witnessing it, and of course no one in the congregation can see them, but they're witnessing what's going on, and they see, as the opening prayer begins, someone comes to the microphone to word the opening prayer, to lead that prayer. And he notices that there's no sound coming from the microphone. In fact, there are only a couple of voices that he hears, mental voices, so to speak. As he hears just a couple of people across that huge auditorium, and only two or three that are praying that prayer to God. And he says, "Well, what's wrong? I can't hear anyone. I can't even hear the man who's up at the front leading this prayer." The angel says, "This is the way that God hears the prayers of this congregation." And then they go into the singing, and the song leader gets up and announces the number, and everyone turns their page, book to that page, and they begin to sing, and you can tell that everyone's singing because their mouths are moving. But again, he hears only two or three voices. And he says to the angel, "What's wrong? Why am I only hearing these two or three voices? And why did I only hear two or three voices during the prayer? What's going on?" And the angel said, "Remember, you are seeing and hearing what God sees and hears. Only those two or three are sincerely worshiping God. The others, oh, if you were there physically, you'd hear them singing louder perhaps than anyone else. But they're only singing so that others will compliment them on their voice. Or they're only singing to know how holy and righteous they are." Now, does that mean that it's wrong for us to sing out and be the loudest one singing? No. But what we have to understand is that if it doesn't come from the heart, it's not going to get out of the roof of this building. God's not going to hear it. He's not going to listen to that. Because He's not here for us to get laud and praise for ourselves. If you remember when Jesus talked about letting your light shine, He said that others may see your good deeds and glorify your Father which is in heaven. The purpose of our singing should be to teach and admonish and exhort one another, to draw their attention not to how beautiful our voice is or how well we can hit the high notes or how perfectly we enunciate the words. None of that. Our purpose in singing should be to draw their attention to the truths about God that are in those songs so that they may learn more about Him. And we must beware. In Job 20 and verse 5, he says, "The trumpet triumphing of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite is but for a moment." And then in chapter 27 and verse 8, he says, "For what is the hope of the hypocrite, though he has gained, when God takes away?" It sounds a lot to me like something Jesus said. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Job says, what hope does he have, no matter how much he's gained, when God takes his soul? What hope does he have then? Where's the hope? No hope left. If his hope was in earthly gain, He's not going to have any hope left. And then in chapter 36 and verse 13, again in the book of Job, it says, "But the hypocrite in heart heat up wrath." Heat up wrath. Now, I don't know about you. I don't think I want a whole big heaping helping of wrath on me. God's wrath is something to be avoided, not something to be heaped up. And yet here we see that the hypocrites in heart, those who aren't sincere, those who are just playing the part, putting on the mask, wearing the clothes, going through the motions, however we want to phrase that, those are the ones. You know, often people say, well, a hypocrite is somebody who says one thing but does another, who teaches that you shouldn't do something but they do it. Well, to some degree that's accurate as well. But you know, many times the hypocrite may actually be doing the right things. They may be singing, they may be praying, they may be preaching or teaching or reading the Bible. But they're doing it for the wrong motive. They're doing it for the wrong reasons. And that makes all the difference in God's eyes. Jesus warns us in His Sermon on the Mount several times that we shouldn't be like the hypocrites. It's not something we should want to do. In chapter 6 and verse 2, He says, when you do your alms, that's, you know, your giving, giving to charity, or giving to the church, when you're doing these righteous acts of a sort, just when you're doing these things, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Wow, can you imagine? I imagine it probably happened. You've seen it, haven't you? The people who give a great big check to some charitable organization in front of all of the news cameras, so that everybody will see just how much they're giving. Oh, they didn't sound a trumpet in front of them. No, what they did was they got on the phone and called all the news stations. I'm going to be giving a big donation. Y'all come down and get a picture of this. We don't need to be like that. In fact, He says quite the opposite. But can you imagine? We come in to take up the collection on Sunday morning, and somebody comes marching in, and they start blowing their trumpet, and they start announcing, "Behold, I'm coming to give!" And they bring a big bag of money and drop it in the plate. Now, can the church still use that money for good? You bet. Can God be benefited by that money through the spreading of the gospel? You bet. But is that person going to be benefited as a result of it? No. They've gotten all the reward they're going to get by the fact that those people saw them. That's all they can expect. Then He says in verse 5, when you pray, don't be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Now, I've known some people who misunderstood the idea here, to the point that if they were in a restaurant, they wouldn't even say thanks for their food. They wouldn't even say a prayer for the food because they didn't want to be accused of praying in public. The key here is that they may be seen of men. It's not whether you're seen, but it's whether you're wanting to be seen that's the problem here. If your goal in doing this is to draw attention to yourself, then that shows you're following the pattern of the hypocrite. Will people see? Yes. Jesus said, you're a city set on a hill. It can't be hid. If you're doing what's right, people are going to notice. But when they notice, Are you going to take praise for yourself as a result of that? Or are you going to direct that praise to God? We need to remember who deserves the praise. Not us. It's the Father. And then he says, when you fast, don't be as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces so that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. Imagine going around, oh, didn't shave. I was so weak because I'm fasting. I just couldn't bring myself to shave or even wash my face or anything today because I've been fasting for 5 days in a row. That's the kind of thing that these hypocrites would do. They made a big. What Jesus said was, "You want to fast? Good, fast. Do it to the Lord so that the Lord sees. But don't make a big show of it to others. You wash your face. You comb your hair. You shave. You put on your makeup, lady. You go ahead and go out there looking just like you would any other day. So that your Father in heaven sees, but other people don't. That's where you're really going to get your reward from God." And then in chapter 7 and verse 5, he talks about the two brothers. Two brothers here. One has a little speck of sawdust in his eye, if you can imagine. A mote, the King James calls it. And the other, if you can imagine, he's got a big old landscaping timber sticking out of his eye, a beam. Maybe one of these beams that we've got that holds the stick. Can you imagine having one of those in your eye? Whew. I think you'd notice something like that. But can you imagine? The one with the big old beam in his eye is trying to, here, let me help you get that little speck out of your eye. Jesus says, you're a hypocrite. First, take the beam out of your own eye. Then you can see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Now, again, people sometimes misunderstand this. Notice Jesus didn't say, leave the speck in your brother's eye. He didn't say that. That's what our world is. You can't, you don't have any right to say anything to me. What Jesus says is, you first take the beam out of your eye. And then, yes, you help your brother get that speck out of his eye. Have you ever had a speck in your eye? It's not pleasant. And sometimes you finally get that thing out and you can't even see it. It was such a tiny little thing that you can't even see that there was anything there. And yet, it hurt so bad. And yet, we sometimes would think, oh no, we better leave them alone and let that stay in there. No, that's not what Jesus tells us. You know, Jesus never got on to the Pharisees or corrected them because they followed the law too closely. That's a common misunderstanding that people have about the Pharisees and about Jesus' attitude toward the Pharisees. Some people think that the problem with the Pharisees was that they were law keepers and that they kept the law too closely. Jesus never condemned them for keeping the law too closely. What Jesus condemned them for was not keeping the law properly, and in many cases, not keeping it closely enough, allowing their traditions to override what the law of God said. That was where the problem was. You know, some people say, well, you Church of Christ people, you're always wanting to follow all the laws. Well, Jesus never said don't follow the laws. What Jesus said was don't allow your traditions to interfere with the laws. Don't teach as doctrine the commandments of men. Those are the things Jesus said. He didn't say don't worry about keeping the law closely enough. In fact, in one of the examples of him getting on to the Pharisees in Matthew 23 and verse 23, he says, woe unto you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You pay tithe of mint and anise and cummin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. And they say, see, they should have been having mercy and not been worrying about keeping the law and tithing all those things. Wait a minute. Let's finish reading what Jesus says. What does Jesus say? These, the judgment, mercy, and faith, these ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. So Jesus says, it was good that you were tithing these little small bits, these little herbs that grow in your garden. Good! I'm glad you thought enough of God's law and tithing that you tithed everything. But he said you were so busy paying attention to those little things that you forgot these great big things over here, like justice and mercy and faith. He tells them the same thing when he says, you strain out a gnat. Now a gnat was one of the smallest of the unclean animals that they couldn't eat. And you can't get much smaller than a gnat. But they would carefully strain any water or any liquid that they were going to drink. They strain it out to keep the gnats out so that they wouldn't be unclean because they ate a gnat. Well, there was nothing wrong with that. Jesus didn't say, well, you shouldn't be bothering to strain gnats out. But what he said the problem was even though they strained out that little bitty gnat, they were swallowing camels. And a camel was one of the biggest unclean animals that there was. He said, hey, you know, it's good that you want to be clean. You want to follow the law in this regard. Then follow it. You're doing the little stuff, but you're not doing the great big stuff. We've got to watch out, lest we become hypocrites like the scribes and Pharisees. One of the most discouraging things that he says about them in Matthew chapter 23, verses 13 through 15. He says, but woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Notice now what he says to them. And this is what hypocrites do. And this is what we'd be guilty of if we practice hypocrisy. For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For ye neither go in yourselves. It's bad enough that you're not going in yourself. Now that's bad. That's a sad statement, isn't it? You're not going into the kingdom of heaven. Now can it get any sadder than that? Yes, it can. Jesus is about to make it sadder than that. For you neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye or allow. In other words, you don't allow those that are entering to go in. So not only will you not go in yourself, you're keeping other people from going in. That's sad. But that's what we do when we practice hypocrisy. We keep ourselves out of heaven, and we keep others out of heaven. It's a sad thing that so many people don't understand. They won't go to church because of the hypocrites in the church. And so they condemn themselves to an eternity in hell with those very same hypocrites. That they just don't understand that they don't realize it. And of course, it will be even worse for those hypocrites who knew what was right and yet didn't do it. He goes on to say there, in verse 15, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you compass sea and land to make one proselyte or one convert. You go all over the place to convert one person. And then, when he is made, you make him twice the child of hell that you are. Have you ever heard the statement that the student is more radical than the master? It's so often true. It was true in the case of Saul of Tarsus and his master Gamaliel. You know, he had sat at the feet of Gamaliel. Gamaliel was the one who had told the Jewish council, leave it alone. If it's of men, nothing will come of it. But if it's of God, we can't fight against it. And so, what did his student Saul do? He got letters to go get them all and put them to death. See, he was much more radical than his teacher had been. We need to think about that as we consider how we teach and what we teach. If you want somebody to be more radical, you better be teaching them to be radical about what's right. And not just what's right, but why it's right and how it's right. Because we could raise up an entire generation who teach the right things and practice the right things, but they do it with the wrong heart. And they're just as wrong as the people who are doing the wrong things. Jesus says that those who worship God must worship Him in spirit and in truth. We need to be sure that we're not forgetting one of those in pursuit of the other. Sometimes it's easy to get the right things. It's easy to look at the Bible and see the commandments that are taught in regards to worship, for example. Well, we should have the Lord's Supper on the first day of every week. The Bible teaches us that. We should be singing without instrumental music. How the Bible teaches us that. Okay, we see that. But the question is, are we singing? Or is God just seeing our mouth moving? Like the story that we mentioned earlier. Are we taking our minds back to the scene on Calvary when we partake of the Lord's Supper? Or are we so busy thinking about other things that we're just taking a bite of this and a sip of that? And we may be doing the right things, but are we doing it for the right reasons and in the right way? We're going to have to face the music. So the little story there on your page about facing the music and about the fellow who had pretended he'd hold the flute to his mouth and pretend to play all along while everybody else was playing. But when it came time for him to have a one-on-one session with the conductor, he finally had to admit that he was a fake. He'd just been pretending. We may fool everyone around us, but we won't fool God. And there will come a day when we will stand before Him and we won't be able to pretend anymore. He will lay the thoughts and intents of our hearts wide open. And we'll be judged based on that. If you're here tonight, perhaps you've fallen into the trap of hypocrisy. It's so easy. It's so easy. We want to be righteous. And it's good to want to be righteous. We should want to be righteous. But sometimes we want it so bad that we'll deceive others and deceive ourselves so that we can pretend we are when we haven't reached it. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with God. Don't pretend anymore. God will be merciful to you, a sinner. But He will not show mercy to those who won't admit they've done anything wrong. Be honest. Be open with God. If you're here tonight and you've lived in hypocrisy, you've lived long enough now that you have the opportunity to turn that around. You lived long enough that you have the opportunity to go back to being sincere with God, to being what God wants you to be. You can do that tonight. If you're here and you're not a Christian, you need to become one. You might look at others and say, well, I know so-and-so is a Christian, but they don't live like they should all the time. That's right. They don't. None of us do. Jesus is the only one that was ever perfect. The old bumper sticker that says, Christians aren't perfect, just forgiven. We can be forgiven. You can be forgiven if you'll come to Christ. If you're here and you have a need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.